I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Fred Litwin joins me again. He's just published a new book, I Was a Teenage JFK Conspiracy Freak. It's a great book that looks at the myriad of conspiracy theories surrounding the assassination of John F. Kennedy in 1963. Mr. Litwin also looks at how in 55 years the killing of Kennedy has been used by the left and the right to illuminate myths on myths about power in the United States. He begins in the book by looking at how at 18 he began thinking about the assassination and who might have carried it out. He became obsessed with it, and he chronicles all the research, all the books, and the people he sought out to clarify his thoughts and beliefs as to who did it. We see, too, how Fred comes to the belief it was Lee Harvey Oswald alone that was the assassin. Also looked at critically in this book is the Oliver Stone film JFK and how that is homophobic. Mr. Litwin also looks at the CBC and how the Fifth Estate has featured programs on the assassination, taking a conspiratorial view of what happened in Dallas on the 22nd of November 1963. Fred Litwin was last on the program in 2015 when his first book, Conservative Confidential, Inside the Fabulous Blue Tent, was published. He has written for the National Post, the Ottawa Citizen, the Toronto Sun, C2C Journal, iPolitics, and the Dorchester Review. He started the Freethinking Film Society and is the founder of Northern Blues Music. His Twitter handle is at Fred Litwin. The book is published by Northern Blues Books. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program in Ottawa, Ontario, Fred Litwin. Mr. Litwin, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
Very good.
So I was telling you I enjoyed the book a great deal, but it did hurt my head a little bit in terms of sorting out what a lot of these conspiracy theories, theorists think or say or believe. You were seven when Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, but when was it that you were really serious about like looking into the Kennedy assassination? You were still a kid, right?
When I was 18 years old, so 1975, when the Geraldo Rivera show played the Zapruder film, the first national showing of this important film taken of the assassination, and it shocked the whole United States, and it shocked me to see Kennedy's head go back and to the left after the fatal shot,
and
that got me hooked.
Yeah, and that was the show. The same program, I guess, that Dick Gregory appeared on?
Yeah, Dick Gregory was on there, and along with Ralph Schoenman, who used to work for Bertrand Russell, and Robert Groden was the one who showed the film.
Yeah, I want to just talk about Gregory for a second here, because as a comedian, he was a marvelous comedian. But unfortunately, this would have been 75. Even then, he was talking about conspiracy theories that he believed in. I used to listen to him on Don Imus regularly, and occasionally he was funny, but there were a lot of wacko things that he'd say. Not just him, but a lot of the people that you talk about in the book. Why do they believe this stuff?
I think it's first off, it's very tribalistic, so it puts you with a small group of like-minded people who believe you have some access to special information. So it's tribalistic, it's fun, and it sort of indicates that you're the guys that are on the hunt for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You can see beyond what's going on, and you have some special knowledge. I think it just feeds into, a long-standing psychological... I don't want to be a psychologist, but this thirst for being special and for understanding, it's very tribalistic.
And do you think they get anything more than that out of it? I mean, some of these people do get to travel the world and speak and peddle their beliefs elsewhere. And so I'm wondering, is it not necessarily a financial thing, but it's certainly an attention thing, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is an attention thing. For some people, it's very, very financial. I mean, you now have the emergence of a few people who are complete scam artists, who are claiming to be witnesses or claiming to be people in the life of Lee Harvey Oswald, who go around from conference to conference selling their books. And so for some people, it is financial. For others, it's you can get invited to, like, all these different conferences with like-minded people, and you're the one up there exposing the truth. What could be more fun than that?
Yeah, you write in the book about Judith Vary Baker.
Yeah,
I had her on the show when she did that tour, and I guess it was Toronto, and I talked to her when she was in Montreal, and she did mention to me that the night before she'd had a dinner where there was glass in the food.
Right.
Which you mentioned in the book. Did she know? Did she actually know Oswald?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, she certainly worked at Riley Coffee in New Orleans when he was there. So, but the odds are she was on the clerical side. He was, you know, greasing the machines. The odds are they didn't know each other.
And so, she's one of many people that you write about in the book who have various connections to the assassination, but perceived or otherwise. You know, when I'm thinking of the Warren Commission and
yep.
and what they were meant to accomplish, I guess it's even though that's supposed to be the definitive word, a lot of people poke holes into it, though, right?
Yeah, there's a lot. That was everybody in the 60s poked holes in the Warren Commission report.
But looking at it now, Fred, what do you think are say, the flaws of it? I mean, it is the definitive word for you, right?
Well, they came up with the right answer. They certainly made a few mistakes. I mean, they were limited to 10 months of work by Lyndon Johnson. He didn't want their work to interfere with the 1964 elections. So they could have used more time. They made one very big mistake, was they didn't have a team of experts analyze the Kennedy autopsy x-rays and photographs. And had they done that, that would have given them hard medical data on the wounds, placements, and trajectories. And it would have forestalled a lot of criticism. But they didn't do that. But they came up with the right answers. It wasn't a perfect commission, but they were full of integrity, and they did a pretty good job.
And right after that, I guess the conspiracy theory started, right?
Even before they reported, the conspiracy theory started.
Yeah.
And as soon as the report came out, and of course they issued 26 volumes of evidence, and modern day Talmudic scholars started going through the 26 volumes and finding any inconsistency they could find in writing about it.
Have you got your own copy, bound copy?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do have my copy of the 26 volumes.
Yeah. Were these conspiracy theories that began right after the assassination, were they largely a leftist thing?
They were almost exclusively a leftist thing, except for the John Birch Society, which, of course, saw a communist conspiracy and then also a Jewish conspiracy. But other than that, it was all people on the left.
And then now it's people on the right. Even people like Donald Trump have bought into some aspect of it, right?
Yeah, I think people on the right have decided, hey, this is too good to pass up, and we can now talk about the deep state. And so you've got a number of right-wing sites and right-wing people like Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi, who have written books about conspiracy. Alex Jones has gone down the conspiracy rat hole. So the right has joined in, and both sides can now see some common ground.
So after you watched that Geraldo program in 1975, what did you think?
Well, I was really intrigued. I wondered, how do you explain the Kennedy's head going back into the left after a shot which supposedly came from behind?
Uh-huh.
And so my first thought was to go into the library, and of course all they had was conspiracy books, and it ultimately led me to discover the fact that the autopsy x-rays and photographs were in the National Archives, and that two doctors, private doctors, had examined them in 1972. And I wrote to both of those doctors, and I got all their articles, and they both agreed that the shots came from behind. They weren't bothered by the reaction of Kennedy's head. And one of them was a very famous forensic pathologist.
And to explain, for people listening, the Kennedy's head going back, was that because the car was speeding up?
No, basically what happened was it probably was a neuromuscular spasm. So if you really examine the Zapruder film in detail, he gets hit in the head. His head actually goes forward for around 2 inches, and then it starts to go back and to the left. And his back muscles tightened. He was wearing a brace. Back muscles are more powerful than stomach muscles, so he went back and to the left. There also might have been a secondary effect where you have a mass of exiting material from the right front of the head.
Uh-huh.
So like a jet, this material exits, and it helps to push the head back.
And so after you get these articles from the doctors and you do more of your own study of it,
yeah.
Did your thinking evolve right after, or when did that change, say?
Well, my thinking evolved in the sense I still thought there was a conspiracy, but I never believed that there was a shot from the front. I didn't believe in the single bullet theory, that one bullet hit both Kennedy and Connolly in the car,
uh-huh.
And I thought there might have been a small conspiracy. And it wasn't until the early 90s that I changed all of my opinions on the case.
And then what accounted for that?
I was reading some old newsletters by a very good researcher by the name of Paul Hoke. He had a newsletter in the 90s, and he was writing about the second investigation, the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And he was writing about all the scientific tests they had done. And he said, you know, we expected that any one of their tests would demolish the Warren Commission, and not one test did. And I was intrigued, and at that point, somebody published all of the House Select Committee's evidence on CD-ROM.
Uh-huh.
And so I bought that and started reading about all their scientific tests. And it just blew me away how much they did, and every single test backed a lone gunman.
You know, I was thinking, you know, because we just passed the 55th anniversary of the assassination, if there's anything else that could possibly be revealed now that would, say, change the minds of a lot of these conspiracy theorists, and because of the passage of time, there's really nothing that'll dissuade them from their thought, is there?
Nothing will change them from their beliefs, but there are some documents that are still secret in Russia. Because Lee Harvey Oswald lived in Russia in the late 50s, early 60s. Also documents held in Belarus because he lived in Minsk. And the Cuban government and the Mexican government also have documents related to Oswald's visit to Mexico City in September 63. All of those documents might be interesting, not because they would shed light on the assassination, but we might learn more about Soviet attempts to influence American public opinion in the 60s, that perhaps the CIA was behind the assassination.
And I seem to recall that a year or so ago, there were some documents that I guess the president could reveal, and he was teasing them on Twitter.
It was the deadline to release further documents that had been redacted or not released through the Assassination Record Review Board. Thousands were released, but Trump held back a few documents. But I can tell you there's nothing in the documents that were held back because they're non-assassination documents, and they're probably held back because of informants who might still be alive or intelligence methods that cannot be revealed.
Right, right. So in the book, you also talk about the CBC's role in this, and Brian McKenna, who a lot of us in this country know is a documentary filmmaker. He's done how many pieces on the Fifth Estate, on the assassination?
He's done six documentaries on the Fifth Estate, on the JFK assassination, maybe a seventh, but I can't find information on that seventh one, but at least six, and they're all conspiracy documentaries, and he's put on the weirdest and most extreme conspiracy theories.
And so from what you've seen of his work and what the CBC has aired, do you have an explanation can you speculate as to why he's done the work that he's done on the assassination the way he has?
Well, I spoke to one CBC producer who said he was obsessed with Kennedy. I mean, they're both Irish Catholic, so he loved Kennedy, and somehow he went down, I guess, the same rat hole I went down in Montreal in the 1970s, except he never got out of the rat hole and went on to believe crazier and crazier things. And he's written reviews on Amazon and articles for Rabble, and, it's just incredible. He believes that the Kennedy's body was altered before the autopsy to make it look like it was one gunman. He perhaps now believes the Zapruder film was altered. He believes that there was two Oswalds. I mean, it's really bizarre.
Yeah, and so you write in the book that the CBC has some responsibility in terms of addressing why they've allowed this on their air, right?
It's it's actually a complete scandal. I mean, if you look at PBS in the States, PBS has done some excellent documentaries on their Nova Science show on the science behind the assassination. Frontline did a great two-hour documentary on the life of Lee Harvey Oswald. And then in Canada, we've got these six horrible documentaries that are the worst research in the world. We need an explanation why the CBC has done this, and they won't tell us.
And now the JFK film, that came out in 1991. Is it something that people who say are coming into the JFK assassination sort of not knowing what's going on here, is this something that they should watch?
Well, I think at some point people should watch it, but they need to watch it with a critical eye, and I think my book will help people to see that the underlying conspiracy in that film is that homosexuals killed JFK. And, you know, when I tell people that, they don't believe it, but you have to watch the film and you'll see it. And, of course, Oliver Stone based that on a real-life court case in 1967 when a gay man in New Orleans was actually charged with conspiracy to kill Kennedy.
And this was Clay Shaw, right?
Clay Shaw, an innocent gay man who had retired to write plays and to restore properties in the French Quarter, and all of a sudden he's charged with conspiracy to kill Kennedy, and it bankrupted him, it ruined him. He was eventually acquitted, of course, and then charged with perjury. It took another 2 years to get that thrown out, and he died of cancer shortly afterwards, a ruined man.
And so you in the book, you lay blame, naturally, to Oliver Stone, the person who directed the film, JFK. But you think, if one thinks of Stone now, he's gone down a path in terms of his own beliefs on not only this, but on other things, right?
Yeah, I detail in my book all the crazy stuff that Oliver Stone believes in. I mean, my God, this past May he was in Iran at a film festival where they were paying homage to the terrorist group Hamas. And he was telling people in Iran that he can't make a film critical of American foreign policy. I mean, it's just hard to believe, but he's just gone down this anti-American path that is really, really reprehensible.
And then not to mention those documentaries he did on Putin.
Putin, he did documentaries on Putin, he did stuff on Hugo Chavez. He's just a series of really, really embarrassing documentaries.
When was it that you went to Dealey Plaza? Was that the first time you'd been there?
I've driven around before in the past, but this was March 2018, the first time I'd actually gotten out and really walked around Dealey Plaza.
Uh-huh.
And I was, when I first got there, I was amazed at how small it is. It's a very, very small space. The shots were very close from the Texas School Book Depository, and there's just no way you could have multiple assassins firing without being seen in such a small area.
Yeah, and then I've done what you've done and gone there and then gone upstairs to the I guess it's no longer the Texas School Book Depository, but there's a museum there on the sixth floor.
Yeah, it's a state administrative building, and on the sixth floor they have a museum, the sixth floor museum, which is a very good museum, and everybody should visit there. And you could see the sniper's nest and look out the adjacent window, and they've got some great exhibits. It's a really, really interesting place.
And I went to use the bathroom while I was there, which is on the seventh floor.
Right, yes.
And managed to, they've got security, but I managed to sneak past and then go to the window. I guess the window above the sixth floor, and look out.
Yes.
And you are right that it is, it's not a huge place. And you know, you can see roughly, floor up, right? But you can see roughly what the assassin saw when they were doing what they were doing.
Yeah, the first shot was only around 55 yards away, and the last shot was around 85 yards away.
Yeah.
Not a long distance for Oswald, who was a sharpshooter in the Marines.
The thing that struck me, and you write about this in the book, is just what that area looks like now. And I mean, it's very touristy, and you have a lot of these conspiracy theorists there, peddling various books and documents that they have. You got into it with one of them, right?
I went twice in this trip, and there were different people on the knoll and on the sidewalk, and some of them are very abusive, and they'll really come after you, and just all sorts of nonsense. And if you start to argue back, they either yell at you or completely ignore you. They go crazy, and it's sort of entertaining, but very disappointing.
It is disappointing in the sense that this is a historic place, obviously, but also a rather solemn place. But it doesn't feel like that now, does it?
No, it's a bit of a circus, and everybody's got something to sell. And I commented to a guard from the sixth floor museum about people hawking all their conspiracy books and DVDs, and he said, "Well, people have to earn a living." I said, "Yeah, but it's all conspiracy nonsense. What about people who think there wasn't a conspiracy?" And he said, "Well, that would be insulting."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last time we spoke was in 2015 when your first book was published. Just digressing here, Fred, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
How have you found it in the last 2 years or so, especially in the Trump era, in terms of calling yourself a conservative? Is it difficult?
I think it's very hard, because the question now is, what is conservatism? I'm appalled by Donald Trump, and I don't think he's a conservative, and he's doing a lot of damage to conservative thought, and I'm appalled at people who support him and think that he is where we need to go. So it's been very disappointing and very, it's disheartening to see the reaction of Donald Trump.
A lot of these tactics, a lot of say, political strategy, if you will, tend to trend northward. Do you see us here in this country, say, adopting some of the rhetoric, even, if you will?
Well, we already see some of it. I hope not a lot of it, because I think Canadians are a little different. We've seen some populism already with Preston Manning and the Reform Party.
Mm-hmm.
They were populist way back then. But I think it's not where Canadians are at, and I'm hopeful it will be somewhat immune, or that the infection will be minor compared to what's happened elsewhere.
But back to the Kennedy assassination, I was thinking some of the errors, if you will, of the Warren Commission. I saw the program that you did with Steve Paikin on your book, and Steve asked if... why the Warren Commission didn't talk to Jacqueline Kennedy. Do you think if they had, it would have added anything to the report?
Well, they actually did. They did talk to Jacqueline
Kennedy.
They did, and she had like a 2.5 pages of testimony. They actually didn't publish some of the things she said. She really didn't have much to say. She didn't remember a lot. They asked her about going on to the trunk of the hood of the car afterwards, and she didn't remember that.
Uh-huh.
I always look at, with people like John Connolly, who was in the limousine, and his wife, and Jackie Kennedy. You know, I'm not sure how much they can tell us. They were so close, but it happened so fast, and, you're racing to the hospital before you could even know what happened.
So you've been thinking about this for a long time, Fred. You've now written a book about it. Is there a question or questions that you have in your mind that you want answers to still?
I'd like to know exactly what's in those files in Moscow and what else the Soviet government did to influence public opinion. I don't think there's any real mysteries on the assassination. I think all of our questions have been answered. It's all those foreign documents that would be most interesting. And I think when the rest of the documents that are held in the National Archives are released in the next couple of years, we'll just yawn, because I'm sure there's nothing in them. But it's those foreign documents that are interesting.
Yeah. And I enjoyed this book a great deal. I enjoyed your last book, too. I enjoyed this a great deal. Are you working on another book now?
Well, I'm thinking my next book might be on the CBC.
Hmm.
I had a chapter on the CBC in my last book as well, so I already have two chapters on the CBC, and if I write four or five more chapters, I can have another book.
Yeah. So what do you watch then for news every night? Because a lot of us, I guess, have are used to the CBC just being around it, even if we don't like it or we're tired of it. It's something
yeah,
we
no,
just
I
turn
don't
to.
I want the CBC to be eliminated. I think the CBC should move towards a PBS-type model where it's supported by its viewers and listeners. So I don't want to see it go away. I think it's too, even as a conservative, I think the conservatives couldn't do anything like that because most Canadians do like the CBC.
Yeah.
But no, I go do a lot of stuff on the web to get my news, and I watch PBS from time to time. I'm struck by some of the great shows that are on PBS and how PBS can actually cover all the presidents and American historical figures and American cultural figures and science with terrific documentaries, and the CBC can't do a documentary about each of the prime ministers of
right.
Canada.
Right. Yeah. Fred, it's nice talking again. This is, as I told you before we started, such an interesting and engaging book. Congratulations on it, and good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much, Joseph.
The book is called I Was a Teenage JFK Conspiracy Freak. Northern Blues Books is its publisher. Fred Littman, its author, joined me on the line from Ottawa. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunto.